Support for AHLA comes from Clearwater, the leading provider of enterprise cyber risk management and HIPAA compliance software and services for hospitals, health systems, and their business associates. Our solutions include our proprietary software as a service-based platform, IRM Pro, which helps organizations manage cyber risk and HIPAA compliance across the enterprise, and advisory support and managed services provided by our deep team of information security and compliance experts. For more information, visit clearwatercompliance.com.
Hello, I'm John Moore, Chief Risk Officer and Senior Vice President of Consulting Services at Clearwater. And I have with me here today, Ileana Peters. Ileana, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, John. Hi, everyone. This is Ileana Peters. It's nice to be with you today. I am a shareholder in the Washington, D.C. office of Polsinelli PC, which is an Am Law 100 law firm. Before joining Polsinelli about almost 3 years ago, I was at the Department of Health and Human Services in the Office for Civil Rights, which is the office responsible for HIPAA enforcement. And most recently there, I was the acting deputy director. John?
So Ileana, as you know, one of my favorite things to do is to talk with you about current events and issues related to healthcare, cyber risk, and privacy. And today, I'm hoping to talk with you about privacy and security risks as they relate to APIs or application programming interfaces. How does that sound as a topic?
Always one of my favorite things to do as well, John, is talk to you about current topics. It's a very current topic and not an easy one, so I'm happy to discuss.
All right, great. So maybe we could start out with just talking about what is an API and why are APIs suddenly very important to data flow in healthcare?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I think the easiest way to explain APIs, which are application programming interfaces, which is basically a fancy way of saying a program that allows different systems to communicate with each other and to share data. And so I think that's why APIs have become so important in healthcare and in other industries too, is because they really are a way to facilitate robust communications and data sharing. And, you know, John, you know, and your team at Clearwater well knows the fact that there is so much work being done today around data sharing and about data sharing and how to do that in a way that is, quick, efficient, and private and secure, which is obviously something that you and I are very concerned with. So these APIs are really part of the conversation because of the larger conversation about the best ways to share data for all different types of purposes in healthcare.
Right. I think explanation of API that I think may be helpful to this audience anyway is sometimes you'll hear it referred to as a contract. So an API is an offer, and the offer looks something like this. If you send information to me in this well-defined format, I will then provide you with the following service or information in this described format. And so when someone or in a system then accesses the API or sends that information in the format required, that's sort of an acceptance of that offer. And then when the service or data is provided back, that's fulfillment of the contract. So sometimes I think that's a helpful way to think about this. It's really just a well-defined way for two systems to communicate. And as Ileana suggested, I think that in particular for some time now, probably the last decade, there's been the belief that if we can just facilitate the easy easy exchange of electronic health information between healthcare providers and patients and payers, et cetera, everyone within the healthcare environment, that we'll get two things. One is we're going to get improved care, and the other is that we're going to get reduced cost. And so I think that we're starting to get to the point with with some of the requirements around APIs, which we're going to talk about in just a second, that hopefully will start to realize some of those benefits that of reduced cost and improved care. And I think that's really where we're sort of at in the conversation right now. So kind of getting to that, Ileana, there's been, you know, there were two new final rules that came out, one from CMS and one from ONC. So how do you think those rules introduced earlier this year are going to impact the use of APIs?
Right, right. Great question, John. I think, you know, I think ultimately it remains to be seen, in my opinion, how, you know, how these new requirements from CMS, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and ONC, which is the Office of the National Coordinator at HHS, really start moving this conversation along. And again, ultimately, this is about more robust data sharing in a lot of different circumstances. And that can be data sharing between a healthcare provider of some type and a patient, or a health insurance company and a patient. It can be data sharing between healthcare providers or a healthcare provider to a health plan, or it can be data sharing from these types of entities to the public or to different types of publicly available applications that, you know, a patient may want to use, for example. So, you know, the rules that came out from CMS and ONC are sort of taking basic steps to require communications, like you were just talking about, John, these contracts, having these sort of contracts in place to share this information in certain ways. And for example, CMS is requiring that certain payers make certain limited information publicly available using a standard-based API. So, you know, again, taking these steps to make sure that certain entities are enabling the appropriate communication based on the use of these APIs. So, you know, sort of sharing directory information outside the entity based on a standards-based API and making sure that that capacity exists and that certain entities are undertaking those. And then, you know, the other things that the ONC is doing are really trying to support API certification criteria as well. And what that means is making sure that these electronic health record sets that we're using have certain functionality involving APIs. And so what that means, again, is to drill down even more, is making sure that certain types of software, these electronic health record software applications, can share certain types of data using APIs. And in these cases, mostly for purposes of treatment or to provide access to a patient to their own information. So, for example, one of the criteria that ONC is supporting is, patient matching across different types of healthcare settings, sharing of clinical notes and allergies and medication information. To make sure that once you've identified a patient across the system, the right information about that patient gets transferred to all the folks in that system that need access to that information. So they've, you know, promulgated these different standards, including the FAST Healthcare Interoperability Resources Standards, which is known as FHIR, in association with these APIs, and in really trying to encourage folks to ensure that their software applications that interact with medical records are able to share information in a more robust way so that, again, patients get better care and everybody has the information that they need to really make sure that the health system works appropriately.
Yeah, I think, you know, APIs obviously have been around for quite a long time, and I think that the issue has been that many of the APIs that existed in the healthcare space were proprietary or closed in one way or another, and so they didn't truly facilitate the exchange of information, except if you were using, for example, systems from the same vendor, or you know, there's a lot of lock-in type of economic approaches, that let's call them, to the use of APIs. And I think the hope is really, to your point, by introducing these standards or requirements around the APIs to open that up, to facilitate, ideally, I think this was one of the objectives, to facilitate competition, to facilitate opportunity for economic development, as well as the freer exchange of healthcare information. And you know, that goes to perhaps one of the newer elements of this. And this is the patient access through third-party applications through the API, which I want to talk to you a little bit more about shortly. But before we get to that, Ileana, how does this relate? And I know there's been a lot of discussion recently in the industry about information blocking and a lot of concern about information blocking. How does this all tie into information blocking provisions?
Right. Great question. So information blocking is again, part of the Office of the National Coordinator's initiatives and part of the new rules that they've promulgated. And information blocking is really about the activities that the Office of the National Coordinator expects entities to be willing to undertake to share information. So again, we're back to the idea that in order for our health system to work, we need to really ensure that there is robust data sharing in appropriate ways and in private and secure ways. And I know we're going to talk about that too, John, because I know that's one of your concerns as well. But really, you know, making sure in circumstances where the data sharing is in fact appropriate, and that is between healthcare providers that are working with a patient, or between a healthcare provider and a health plan, or with the patient themselves, that there aren't any limitations on what information can be shared for those purposes. When it is an appropriate sharing of information, we want to make sure that it happens quickly, efficiently, and in an electronic way from these certified EHR technologies. So again, the basis that we're talking about is these certified EHR technologies that are expected to really have these capabilities built in, and really ensure that there isn't any, to your point earlier, John, there aren't any unreasonable barriers to sharing that information, you know, across different types of providers who use different types of EHR systems, or with, for example, applications that the patient may want to use as well. So it's not just, you know, EHR to EHR at the end of the day, even if those are two different types of proprietary systems, but across health systems, across different states, and with different types of entities outside the healthcare system that may be, you know, providing services directly to the patient. And so these APIs are really being leveraged to ensure that we can share this information as required by these rules that essentially prohibit unreasonable barriers to that sharing.
Yeah, I think that my impression is that there was the impression, rightly or wrongly, or to certainly at different degrees, that organizations were. And by organizations, I use that term broadly. That could be IT, certified health IT vendors or providers or other folks within the healthcare ecosystem, that they were increasing switching costs in an attempt to retain customers by making it difficult for information to be exchanged outside of those organizations. At least I think that was the perception that led to much of this legislation around kind of opening up the APIs and introducing standards, as well as the information blocking provisions, because when you look at them, that seems to be where they're primarily targeted at. And then there's the exceptions that came to that, which I think are a recognition that there has to be some limitations on this for security and other reasons, the safety of patients and so forth, that that there is some limitations on the, that there are some circumstances in which there should be some limitations on restrictions on providing information. So it's a really an interesting, I think, area to look at. And it's going to be interesting, certainly, to see how that unfolds sort of going forward and how enforcement will work in that space. I mentioned earlier, Liana, you know, this idea that there's going to be a plethora of third-party applications. And at least my expectation is, and I think the expectations of some of the folks behind the legislation is that those third-party apps may be provided by organizations or companies that are not traditionally healthcare organizations, and that they be providing them directly to patients for their use, or to the public for their use in maintaining their healthcare information. So that in particular brings up, I think, some conversations about HIPAA and how HIPAA regulations apply. But I think more generally, how does HIPAA regulations factor into all of this with the APIs and the third-party apps? And in addition to that, now we have more and more state regulations as well. Where do you see that all kind of playing out?
Yeah. I think that's a really important part of the conversation too. And it's interesting because HIPAA does and does not apply, to your point, depending on the entity that may be involved. So the interesting thing about the way that we do data privacy and security in the U.S. is that it's very sector specific. And so we have very clear rules in some cases for some types of entities, depending on what kind of information they hold, and less clear rules for others. So you may have a situation where you have a healthcare provider that is covered by HIPAA, and you have a patient that wants to share data with an entity that's a wellness app, for example, and that wellness app is not covered by HIPAA, because the vast majority of those types of third-party applications that deal with wellness issues aren't, because HIPAA actually has a pretty limited jurisdictional scope and really deals with entities that either provide health insurance or get paid by health insurance. So if we go beyond the HIPAA scope, then we may be dealing with different types of jurisdiction, like FTC certainly would have jurisdiction over those types of entities and their security practices. And the FTC has been engaged in very robust enforcement, in my opinion, over the last few years related to consumer promises. Related to security, but, you know, it's a different enforcement scheme. So, you know, it's really about trying to help consumers understand what the different protections for their data is in different circumstances, and making sure that to the extent that you as a particular entity are covered by a specific set of requirements, be it HIPAA or FTC requirements or state law requirements, or in some cases international data privacy and security requirements, that you understand how to comply with those in these new data sharing efforts. And certainly, you know, from a HIPAA perspective, from an FTC perspective, and arguably from a state law perspective in many states, including, for example, California, those would include robust data privacy and security protections for the data, not only, you know, in your hands, but when it's being transmitted, and arguably in the hands of the recipient as well.
Yeah, I think, at least this has been my experience recently, particularly with all the COVID situation that we have now. I see a lot of comments from the public, which suggest to me that they don't truly understand when HIPAA applies and when it doesn't, which isn't terribly surprising. It can become, you know, somewhat complex if you're not a student of the HIPAA regulations. But I see that more and more frequently, where there's this notion that if it's my healthcare related information, it's covered by HIPAA and therefore I'm protected. And I think it's certainly not quite that clear. And to your point, it becomes even more, though, well, this is my impression. You can correct me if you have a different view, Liana, I'm sure you will, but that the whole privacy, the legal landscape and from a privacy perspective within the U.S. is becoming more complicated by the day with, you know, with different state regulations that are going into place. Usually HIPAA is excluded from those, but it's not always so clear. And, you know, or information that would be covered by HIPAA, but it's becoming more and more challenging, I think, for folks like yourself that are, you know, that are providing guidance in this space and for certainly for the just typical American out there who's trying to understand what limitations there are around the use of their information by organizations with whom they're trusting that information to understand what are the roles and how do they all play out or work together. Ileana, we've talked about the APIs, and you mentioned that certainly that Clearwater and I personally have, you know, some concerns around security, and I know you have a security background as well, at least to a certain extent. So, what do you think are the most common vulnerabilities associated with APIs that an organization should be concerned about?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think to your point, John, the APIs are a tool, and just like any other tools, I hear this often with AI applications as well. They're really only good as the entity that built them. So, you know, when we're looking at APIs or when we're talking about contracts, you know, to your point earlier, you really need to consider the source and really ensure that you understand exactly what the API, the particular API that you're using does and has the capability to do. So certainly if you are a smaller provider, for example, and you're working with a reputable vendor to really help you enable these exchanges of health information in a way that is secure, it's encrypted, you know, you have these rules of the road, including if you're using a FHIR standard API framework, for example, that you can, you know, you can rely on those interactions. But I think similarly, if you are working with less reputable entities, you may need to be concerned about how those APIs are being implemented and their technical specifications, and making sure that they do, for example, enable encrypted transmissions, and that your data is being protected when it's being exchanged, making sure that it's a known entity in terms of how you're having those quote unquote conversations or communications that involve your data. So I think that is sort of my general way of looking at it. But I'm sure, John, you have specific thoughts there too, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too.
Sure. I think the big one you've already touched on, and that is the software itself and whether there's deficiencies that exist within the software. And you know, that comes down to your point, the rigor with which the organization who created the API, the rigor with which they engage in their coding practices, including implementing security during the coding process itself, which unfortunately, many organizations are not particularly mature. Even the organizations that have, you know, been developing software for some time, oftentimes are not real mature in how they include or embed security within that process. And so, you know, as a result, a lot of times there's bugs in the code or errors in the code or security defects within the code itself that can prove problematic. And we've seen that. We've seen that unfold numerous times, and including recently, where you can have problems in the code itself, and not necessarily a bug, but we have the SolarWinds issue right now, where someone was able to introduce essentially like a backdoor into one of their backups, into their official backup process, so it was pushed out to all of the software. So you need to be very careful about deficiencies or problems within the code itself or the software itself. Another area where we'll often see issues is around authentication. So needless to say, in many of these cases, in particular, in the case of the consumer third-party apps, you're going to be exchanging some sort of credentials with the API so that it knows who you are and whether or not you have access to the information you're requesting. And if that exchange of credentials itself is flawed, those credentials might be visible to someone watching the traffic, which is another potential problem. And kind of going before that in terms of the lifecycle, how did I get those credentials? So how did I receive my password? How did I receive my username? Was it possible for someone to capture that information before I even got it, so they already have that information available to them? Now, those are some of the things we see. Another issue that can come up, and this is more of a from an availability perspective. So we think about confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Confidentiality being what oftentimes people equate with privacy. There's some subtle distinctions, but who only allowing those people to see the information who should be seeing the information comes confidentiality. Integrity being I want to make sure that there's not errors introduced or unauthorized changes being made to the information, which is particularly troublesome from a healthcare perspective. And then the last being availability or access to the information. And in that case, we want to make sure that the API is built in such a way that it can handle volumes of traffic that it's going to receive, so that a distributed denial of service attack or some other attack like that on the API isn't going to shut down access to it and prevent the exchange of information. So those are just some of the things. There's more specific vulnerabilities that can exist within these APIs, but those are just a few of the types of things that we typically look at when we're looking at the APIs. And that's the API itself. That's not even thinking about vulnerabilities that might exist in the underlying infrastructure that are supporting the APIs, which are also, obviously with something that you'd want to be looking at as well. So that's sort of where we're at when we think about this. So Ileana, I'll ask you one more question. I always have one more question for you, as you know. So if I'm a client organization of yours, I'm considering implementing the APIs, or I feel like I'm required to implement these APIs. I'm also concerned about these potential penalties associated with information blocking. What do you recommend I do? Are there steps that I should be considering right now, or should I should be taking right now?
Yeah. Again, always good questions for me, John. And this is another really good one. I think many times the level of diligence that we're talking about related to sort of vetting, the API and the security issues that may be present, et cetera, are sort of beyond the healthcare entities that we're talking about. And so it may be really helpful for entities, particularly when we're talking about the information blocking requirements from ONC and the interoperability requirements from CMS related to their certified EHR technology, is to, as a first step, really have a better and more robust dialogue with their EHR vendor. So at the end of the day, these healthcare providers aren't the ones who are implementing a lot of this technology. A lot of this is coming from their electronic health records vendor that has the certified EHR technology. So it may really be worthwhile to sit down with the EHR vendor and talk with them about how they are planning to implement these requirements related to APIs, what that means for the healthcare provider in practice. If there are additional concerns about security, having those conversations, but really, again, starting with where the data is going to be coming from. And in most cases, that will be at least start with the electronic health record system that you're using, and really try to get a good understanding of how the requirements are going to be implemented from your vendor. So you can work with your vendor on any issues you may have as a healthcare provider, or, in some cases, a patient having those conversations, in some cases, a health plan or other related health system entity that may be interested in getting data as part of that process. So in many cases, that's what I'm recommending to my clients these days is really, given we're shooting for an April deadline with regard to compliance with these CMS and ONC requirements is using that time to sort of not only digest the requirements themselves from an intellectual standpoint, that is reading the rules and figuring them out, but really having conversations with your vendors to understand how they will help you implement these requirements and how they anticipate the technology to work.
You bring up a number of good, a very, I think, important point that in many cases, or not, if not most cases, the healthcare organizations themselves are looking to third parties to implement a lot of this technology. And that's not that unusual for them, which brings up a number of issues, which I think you've touched on. One is understanding the risk of the vendor. So vendor risk management, sometimes called supply chain risk management or business associate risk, understanding who it is that I'm working with to implement the APIs and any risks associated with that vendor. The next is understanding from our perspective, the risks that are introduced through implementation of the API and understanding, for example, what's the system is that it's that the API is associated with, and if it's an EHR, obviously that's perhaps if there's a crown jewel of crown jewels within a healthcare organization, it's our EHR system. So, obviously the potential impact of a breach is extremely high. So what we need to be very concerned with is the likelihood of that breach occurring. So, we're looking at what controls have been put in place around that API or implemented within that API to reduce the risk of a breach to our EHR in particular. So we want to look at that as well to understand what those risks are and whether or not appropriate controls are in place. And of course, for us, the final step, if there really is a final step, it's more of a process actually, but an ongoing process, as you've pointed out on numerous occasions, of managing risk is that we want to then be testing those controls. So we want to test those APIs to make sure that the controls or safeguards that are in place are operating as designed and functioning as expected and actually doing their job of reducing or mitigating the risk to our organization and perhaps more importantly to our patients. So thank you very much, Ileana. It has been a delight. Our time is running out here. So do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with everybody?
I don't think I have any final thoughts on this particular issue. I just wanted to say again, thank you, John, for the conversation and the robust discussion. And I hope people find all the information here really helpful.
Well, thank you again. And thank you all for listening today. Again, I'm John Moore, Chief Risk Officer and Senior Vice President of Consulting for Clearwater. And we are delighted that we could share our conversation with you today. And thank you very much.